we're doing today is really reminds me of the Hakdamah in the Silas Hashan. Because the Hakdamah in the Silas Hashan is, he says that what I have to say here is really nothing new. But he says it's important for a person to review in his mind the true ideas and therefore be in line with them. There's a Rambam also, the Rambam says in the Pasuk of Kavlakov, Tzavlatzov, strange Pasuk. The Rambam explains that that's what it means. Kavlakov means that a line for a line, a command for a command. Which means to say that with people it's important to review many times. You showed them the straight line once, show it to them again. You gave them the command once, give it to them again. Why? Because the soul of man is such that the emotions are difficult to penetrate. And therefore, it is good to review and to one should go over the true ideas so that the true ideas stand before his mind's eye, and this way he could he's in a state where he's subject to improvement. And as a matter of fact, if I remember correctly, I think that the philosopher Plato said the same thing when he showed his students the reality of the soul in terms of the world to come. The soul doesn't die with the body. And he presented his proofs. This was Socrates before he died. So the students asked, well, what do we do when you're gone and we don't have anybody to go over the proofs? So he said, let the charmer charm you. Which means to say that you should go over the ideas themselves, and by going over the ideas it becomes realistic to the mind, and then the person when he sees the reality is able to adjust his emotions accordingly and live the helps him to live the correct life. So a lot of what we're, if you take a look in paragraph V in Ben Zoma, so the Rambam doesn't go over it. Rambam just says Zemavur Prazacharnu Inyano. The Rambam doesn't really elaborate on it at all, because he says if you reach this point already, so then we've gone over these ideas in the previous Prakam already. Rambam doesn't comment on it, but Rashi and Rabbeinu Yonah do comment on it, and that's why I say that in today's shiur we may be going over some of the points that we've already mentioned before, as the Rambam says. But I think that the descriptions of Rashi and Rabbeinu Yonah are worthwhile repeating, going over, and it is a definite benefit to us to review the ideas. And of course, you know, whenever you go over an idea, there's always a something new in Beis Mishnah Chiddush. Now, Ben Zoma Omer. Yeah. That's true. Tzaratov repeats itself many times, especially, of course, with regard to the Isra of Avodah Zarah, which we've explained many times, the importance of the why the Torah repeats the Isra of Avodah Zarah so many times, because that's really the basis of Kol HaTorah Kula, is the repudiation of Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is more than, as we mentioned many times, more than just primitive idolatry, but it refers to a basic instinctual type of life, which the Torah demands that we rise above, even though we are of an instinctual nature. But that's the challenge of man. Now, in paragraph V, it says, Ben Zoma Omer, Ezeu Chochom Alomed Mikol Adam. Who is considered a wise man? He who learns from every individual. Shenemar, as the prophet says, Mikol Malam Dayeskalti. From all my teachers I have learned. Doesn't mean that I was smarter than all my teachers. Mikol Malam Dayeskalti. Here's a Pierce that says that, but the Ibn Ezra says, Mikol Malam Dayeskalti means that he, that Dovra Melech, and that in Tillim Kufyutes. Tillim Kufyutes, that was a beautiful parrot in Tillim, what David HaMelech mentions over and over again many times towards the end of the parrot, that the enjoyment that he has from Chochmah. Happens to be an amazing parrot. Yes, the essence of the parrot is really is in praise of Torah. In praise of Torah. You know, the Apocorsum say that Talmud wasn't invented till much later, after the Greek period. But the Psukim from Kufyutes show clearly that this is ridiculous. Because the whole Kufyutes, the whole Noah talks about the Chochmas Hashem in his Chukim. The Psukim say the whole. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Landeni Chukecha, and the Fikudecha Asicha, Abilka Chasecha, Bechukosecha Eshtasha, Lo Eshkach Tvorecha. Eshtasha means that he plays with he enjoys the Chukim, he plays with the Chukim. Gal Einai Vabitin Eflos Mitarasecha. And the anyone that knows Gamedos Secha Sha'ashuai Anche Atzasi, that who are the people that I ask for advice? It's your laws. He talks about the Torah like as if it's a person. Like, who do I consult with? I consult with the Torah. The Torah is the his Sha'ashuai, means that this is his entertainment, his joy. Dovkol offer the nafshi chayim kiva. The psukim in one after another, which the havineini ve'etzra sarasecha. The psukim reveal, all these psukim reveal the tremendous chachma that David HaMelech found in the study of Torah. Ve'shtasha b'mitzvosecha asher ahofti. I entertain myself, I play with your mitzvahs, like a shtasha, like a plaything, something I enjoy, which I love. He says, they're like music to me, entertainment, enjoyment. Only a person who is a lamdan can understand what he's talking about. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. The way the world understands that it's referring to reading the Bible. I mean, just the whole psukim make absolutely no sense. The person, of course, is a lamdan and understands the depth of Torah, and that's impossible without Tosh Bal Peh, understands clearly what David HaMelech is talking about. And there's many, many psukim in where he mentions this. So in this perek, in the same perek, this has been my life, and through all my troubles, he mentions that there's only one place that he had to turn, and that was the Chochmas HaTorah, and the enjoyment of the Chochmas HaTorah. Then the Komalam Vayeskalti, he ate Vosecha Sicholi. I gained knowledge from all my teachers because your laws were a sicha means when a person is just talking, just conversing. So he says that to him, what was conversation? Conversation was discussing, that's a natural conversation, discussing the ideas of the Torah. It's, people get together, they want to converse. So most people discuss nonsense, and that's the idea of having a good time. But to him, sicha, his siach, his common speech, was discussing the Torah, discussing ideas. It wasn't something that he felt that he has to learn. Having to learn is not really a level if a person feels he has to learn. But the real level of learning is where a person enjoys the Torah, it's simply an entertainment, and that's his discussion. That's the what's new, I mean, what's happening, what's occurring. He's in the world of thought, in the world of ideas, in the world of Chochmas HaTorah. Yes. Rabbi Yonis, like this, Zel Chochmas Olam Kol Adam, Amru Chachmei Ha'umos. The philosopher said, Ki Hayodea Kol HaChochmas, Interesting, but you're going to quote the philosophers. Heyadea kol ha-chochmos in eino oi va-chochma eino chochma lo-tipeshu achas eino oi va-chochma ki-yadas. But a person that studies the chochmos, even though he knows all the chochmos, so still he's considered a tipesh. He's considered a fool if he doesn't have the love of chochma. He doesn't have the love of chochma. And he says like this, acha oev oso umesave eleho. But a person who loves chochma and desires, is drawn to it. Sava means he has a taiva for it. Afo pishen yedeh klum. Even though he doesn't know anything. Harezen nikra chochma. Shal kol ponim tasig ela chochma ha-amitis. V'das alokim timso. Because this man will reach chochma and he will reach knowledge of God. V'alzeh omar ben zoma ezeh chochma mahalome mikol adam. So, and this I mentioned one time, I said the mistake in people when they read the Mora, and the Mora talks about the intelligent people, Chachomim. So people think that he's referring to individuals who have knowledge. He's not referring to individuals who have knowledge. He's referring to a Chacham, means a person's relationship to ideas. That's what a Chacham is. And Yadis, a Chacham is something which affects the personality, the inner personality, not simply an individual who has knowledge, who has the facts, who has the knowledge, even if he has the ideas. It still doesn't mean anything. He still is not considered a chacham. Chacham is a person who has a certain relationship to chacham. This is al zeh amar ben zoma izel chacham alom mikol adam shekol kach oev hachachma mes'aveh leho. Because he loves chachma to such a degree and has such a desire for it, sheshoel lachol adam va'af mi she'eni yodea ki im dovar echad yilmad mimenu. Even a person who only knows one thing, he will go to that person and he will humble himself before him and he will learn from him. V'yoz yatzliach darko v'oz yaskir. It says then he'll be matzliach and then he'll be maskir, which means to say that a person can have all the knowledge. Like Rabbeinu Yonah says, all the chachmas, these are tremendous chacham, but still it makes no difference insofar as the individual is concerned, unless he has that relationship, unless the soul has that relationship to the ideas, the love of the ideas. If he doesn't have that, he's not considered. The gavra is not a chacham. In Yadis, whenever it says a chacham, it means that the gavra is a chacham, not simply that he has knowledge. Having knowledge which has nothing to do with the inner person is really worthless, according to Yadis. Chachma is not a part of his, is not a part of his life. It's not a part of his nature. Not a part of his essence. So yeah. So we have a different idea, totally different idea, of a chachma. Chachma means an individual whose essence is related to one thing. He recognizes that there is one medium in the world which he's attracted to, and every other emotion, every other thing that he has in his nature that gives him a feeling of assurance insofar as what reality is, he simply leaves. And he only follows one thing, that's chacham. It's because of the love of chacham. So that's the chacham. Kol amar eskal, v'kein amar davar ha-melech, shelomad mikol odom, v'lo yomer zeh eini yedei kamoni, ki mikulom lomad v'hiskel. Moshe la'odom shehifsid kli katan, v'lo mikol odom levakesh atzal. If a person lost something, so he doesn't care from whom he retrieves it. Choose many individuals. It means the attraction is to the chachma per se, and to nothing else. That's the Rabbeinu Yonah. And it's interesting. Rabbeinu Yonah says that a person can never. One thing is interesting. What he mentions over here, where he says that v'oz yaslich darko v'oz yaskil. It means to say. He says kol kopan tasig ala chachma hamitis. The das Elokim Timsa. It means to say that knowledge of God is impossible without this state. See, and with regard, what is the difference basically? It ties into what we spoke about last week actually. That the only person that is, what is a chacham? A person who is attached to reality. God is the source of reality. And insofar as a person is not attached to reality, to the source of chachma, to God, he simply has no place in Chochmah. And Rabbi Yonah says is that if an individual knows all the Chochmahs, there's one area of Chochmah that's impossible for him to attain, and that is the knowledge of God. For a very simple reason. Because it means that all the Chochmahs that he has are merely extraneous to his very essence. They're extraneous to his essence. So he can have a tremendous amount of Chochmah, be a great mathematician, but he can never be a great metaphysician. That's impossible. Why? Because in metaphysics is only possible where the soul of man searches earnestly according to a divine intuition. And that road is only open to a person who has no emotional barriers. That's only possible for a person who is a total chacham. In that area, it's impossible for an individual to achieve any real knowledge unless he's perfected. Unless he simply is in search of emes. Well, so he's not in search of emes. It means that his modus operandi, his main function, has to be guided by something. It's not guided by chokhmah, because that's not his essence. So it means it's guided by the emotions. The emotions have to depict a certain type of reality. A person can't live without a certain picture of reality. The picture of reality that he has to have must of necessity be a distorted one. The only person that can have a true picture of reality is a person who follows the intuition of the Tzelem Elokim. That means he's completely subordinated to Chochmah, and he just follows the road of the mind. So while he can achieve knowledge in other subjects, he can never achieve any knowledge in that subject which is most important, which is Das Elokim. And since that is the case, so his Chochmah simply is of no value. In the area of Das Elokim, the individual will not be able to achieve any chokhmah, no matter how bright he is, no matter how high his IQ is, no matter how intelligent he is. Because since the main things that are guiding his soul are the emotions and not the intellect, so he will have to, of necessity, come to false conclusions with regard to his existence and with regard to his nature, with regard to the world that surrounds him. That automatically prevents him from understanding any perceptions of God. It's completely impossible. A person can be a chacham and can acquire knowledge in other sciences, but he can never be a true chacham. This is really a point that's Masori Ados. And that's why we mentioned last week, that if all these subjects, and that's what we spoke about last week, the chacham and chacham Yisrael were afraid of, with regard to the other subjects. Because studying the other subjects, what happens is that the person is drawn in to the study of the other subject as a mere egoistic acquisition. If it's a mere acquisition, then it has nothing to do with reality. So if it has nothing to do with reality, and reality has to do with the basic function of the individual, the function of the soul, if it has nothing to do with that, so then all the knowledge is simply worthless. Because there's really only one subject. That's Das Elokim. And there's no other subject. That's basically what Rabbeinu Yonah said. Okay. Rashi just says, "Mikoma lamdai kol mi shabo lamdeni yisi maskil shameil edvar v'lo boshti." And I wasn't ashamed, because it wasn't a matter of an egoistic confrontation. It was a matter of simply searching out the ideas, and the ideas were that which were valuable to it. Yes.
I think it's Hillel that says
an individual has to adjust his emotions to the realities. But most people want to take their emotions as given, and therefore they find things in the Torah which go against their emotions, and they simply can't accept it. It's a big battle. But the only way that a person can perfect himself is by this recognition of subordination of what he wishes to be true is virtuous. Everybody wants to be virtuous. Nobody wants to think that he's not virtuous. Since he has to consider himself virtuous, so he must feel that his inner feelings are in line with virtue. This premise is false. This person has to remove that premise. If he doesn't remove that premise, he can't make any headway. The premise is that all the things that he can't be influenced in any way by the type of life that seems appealing to him, that type of life is a false life. It's only based on emotions. He has to be willing to forego that type of a that sense, a certain sense that he feels so secure about. He has to be willing to forego that and say that this is all nonsense. And basically, I just have to start from scratch, learning what the true life is, regardless of my own nature, regardless of my own desires. And he has to be able to leave all these powerful emotions. That's the difficulty. See, if he can't do that, so then he simply can't make any headway. That's the. It's a process that a person must be able to do. It's a separate process that most people in their lifetimes never do, never even encounter it. Because they inherently feel that what they feel about reality is the correct is correct. What they feel about justice is correct, about injustice, all their ideas, and especially in politics, I mean, this becomes a this one feels this is fair, that's fair, this is not fair. It's secure that what they feel basically is the correct is reality. That sense has to be foregone. One must be able to give up that sense. I'm able to say that no matter how strongly I feel about a certain thing as being correct, it simply stems from a part of my nature which is not in line with reality, which must be subdued. That process must take place. It's a unique process, and not everyone, most people do not undergo such a process, but they feel naturally that what their feelings are reality. What feels good is good. That's what people say. It feels good. So it has to be good. The good is defined by what they feel. And if it turns out it's not good, so then simply he has to, it means he didn't do well enough, he has to try again. But people will spend their lives in trying to repeat that process, rather than realizing that the process itself is a faulty one. That's the way most people live. And the Talmud Chacham is the individual who could turn his mind against these feelings, and he creates a rift between two parts of the soul. Anyone that can't do that process can't enter the area of the Talmud Chacham. That's what I mentioned once about Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu went out to Vayabi Sivlosom. How old was he at the time? He was, I think the marriage says 40, he certainly wasn't a youngster. And the Vayabi Sivlosom, why is it that there was a political issue? Well, he didn't know that the Jews weren't slaves before. The answer is because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't act politically according to his feelings, but he spent his time in Chochmah. Then, at a certain age, he decided to analyze politics with Chochmah. That's when it says, Vayetze Elecha Vayabi Sivlosom. So he didn't go by any feelings towards what is politically right or what's not right. First he studied justice in abstract. And then once he understood the principles of justice, then he went out to apply them. But he didn't simply go by his own feelings. Even with regard to his brethren when they were oppressed, he didn't make any judgment. He refrained from making a judgment. Once he was sure that he understood the ideas of justice, then he went and he applied the ideas to the practical. But most people do just the opposite. They run immediately to the practical, and that's it. And they feel this is right, this is wrong, they go by their sense, their inner sense. The inner sense is not a guide. And the world said, let your conscience be a guide. That, according to the others, is completely wrong. There is no inner sense in man that can be a guide. There's only one guide that we have, and that's the guide of the Chochmah. And the Talmud Chochmah is the individual that only applies that measuring rod and abandons every other method. It's a different type of. That's why Chazal, when they talk about Talmid Chacham, it's like they're talking about a different min. The Talmud Chochmah is a different kind of a person. Different kind of a person because he undergoes a different process that other people simply don't ever undergo in their lives. And Talmud Chacham stands apart as a separate type of person. It functions in a totally different way. That's the definition of a Talmud Chacham. Yeah.
I know something similar.
In other words, it means like this. It means that every individual has certain emotional handicaps that prevent them from seeing reality. But it doesn't necessarily mean that at a particular point, a certain individual is not going to see a piece of reality. He might be able to see that point very clearly, even though insofar as the whole is concerned, he may not be able to uncover the Chachmas Hashem. But a certain particular point, he would be able to see. See, that was the pasuk we mentioned last week. The pasuk says, "Hat oznecha l'shmo divrei chachamim." Bend your ear to listen to the words of the wise. V'libcha sashes l'daiti. But then your heart should take that information and you should bend it to my knowledge. God is saying, the knowledge of God. So the chacham takes information from other individuals. You see, like a person could be a great mathematician, but he's not a perfected individual. He's not a perfected individual. It doesn't mean that you should abhor the knowledge that he has. Contrary, you should learn from that knowledge, or you should apply it in a true framework. That's what I mean. But of course, he's not speaking about that particular problem. It's a separate problem. How you can learn from an individual who's not perfected. It's different. But over here, I think what Chazal means. Was it like David Melch says that even a cotton b'shuk, I would ask if he knew a certain point. It's the human mind is not such. See, people have a misconception of the human mind. They feel that a person that's a great chacham, that he knows everything. Like he's an authoritative figure. He knows everything. There's no such thing. A person can be a great chacham, but on a particular point, he missed the point. The mind of man is not is not such that it's simply infallible. That's why there's a tshuva from Rav Moshe that I read recently where he says, and he says, Dava Pasha, you know, it's not a chiddush that he's saying on his own, it's based on a whole Masorah. That somebody asked him if they could move into the area of the Chazonish. Because he, and this person was a Lamban, he doesn't hold from the lot of the Chazonish's psakim. He's allowed to move in there, and that's Shchuna, that neighborhood, even though he's going to go going against what the Chazonish is. The Marisha says that the Chazonish never imagined, no Chacham ever imagined that people are going to agree with everything that he says and no one's going to contest his words. That's not a Chacham. Even the greatest Chacham can have an oversight in a certain area which simply wasn't open to him. So this great Chacham can find himself sometimes learning from a cotton, from a cotton. That's the famous story that happened in Europe, where a Rashi was giving a shir, and I mentioned once about a coin. Why is Yesta Hakir? He says, why is a coin also in a grusha? Is a coin also in a grusha? Because since Gershon took place, the woman was divorced, and that's why he can't marry her because she has a shem grusha. Or is it because a get doesn't really cancel the ishus fully? You see. To the degree necessary for a coin, there's a nice chakira. So Misa does, but a get doesn't. There still is some ishus left. Ishus is subject to variation of degree in halacha. So maybe that's the reason. So they had a whole shir based on this chakira, and there was a youngster sitting in the yard, a little kid, 10 years old. He said, I don't understand, he says. How come a coin can't be machzik rishasa? If you're going to say that the reason is because the ishus is can't be removed totally. So how come the Kohen is not allowed to marry his own wife when he divorces her? He has his still issues, is still there. So this great Guddle worked out an entire shear, and a cutting, a youngster, simply refuted him based on a simple fact. So it shows you that the human mind is not, no matter how great a person can be, no matter how great a chacham a person is, it's always possible for a person to make a mistake. And to make, not just to make a mistake, but to make a mistake on something that a youngster can see, a child can see, face to face, always possible. That's why in halacha we say that if the Rush says that if you could find a mistake in the Rishonim, and you could actually show from Gemara, deduce evidence that they made an error, then you don't paskin like the we don't paskin like a Rishon. you could find rayas that the Rishonim made a mistake on a certain point, then we wouldn't pass away. We wouldn't pass away. The psak goes according to what we see. And no matter how great a chacham the person is, he could always make a mistake. And there's Rashi says in Chulin that he made a mistake. Toa Yisi, Paskin the Shabbat, Paskin Ron, Toa Yisi. Rashi writes it up in the Gemara Chulin. And the Rambam, they asked the Rambam one of the Ravid's kashas. He agreed, no chassidus, he said he made a mistake, it was wrong, made a mistake. No such thing, we don't have anything, there's nobody infallible in Yadis. It's the human mind in search of truth, and the human mind is a fallible mechanism, and a person can make a mistake. There is no such thing, we don't have any such thing as absolute religious security. It does not exist, because it depends on chachma. Chachma doesn't lend itself to such a phenomenon. The people in religion are searching for an absolute security. In our system, however, we don't have such a thing. No such thing as absolute security. The greatest chacham can make a mistake. A person can't say, I got a psak from a Moshe, I know for sure this is 100% right now, I feel terrific, I know this is exactly what the law is. We don't know. It's the greatest knowledge that we have at the time, that's what we follow. But there's no such thing as an emotional security with regard to in Yadis. It doesn't exist. Yes? What it means, we call Malamed's Chavim, means he considered anyone that taught him anything to be his Malamed. The Gemara says that David HaMelech called Achitophel his Rebbe. Because he learned from him one thing or two things. One thing. I don't know, the Gemara says. So he called him his Rebbe. Called him Rabbo Lufo Miudo. Because he recognized this. He was the source. Why Achitophel? Because he was the source. His love of knowledge was so great that this individual gave him a tremendous thing, gave him an idea. So that's why he praised him. He praised him as an idea. Yadis definition of chacham is the attitude of the soul towards chacham. By the soul, I mean the inner man. The attitude of the inner man towards chacham. That's the definition of a chacham. A few words. Yaakovish, this Yisrael Rash says, Ve'eino holech achara. And he doesn't follow it. What does Rashi mean, of course? What does Rashi mean? What does Rashi mean? Ve'eino holech achara? Kavishis Yisrael means that he simply doesn't follow it. Because it's impossible for the person to remove his instinctual life. That's impossible. What he could do is he recognizes where it's pulling him and he simply doesn't follow it. That's the concept of Kavishis Yisrael. It's like this. According to Rashi, yeah, he still is considered a gibor. He still is considered a gibor, even though he hasn't completely yet. He's still conflicted, but he still is considered a gibor, even though he's conflicted. It's interesting. The highest level the Rambam says is where the person is over in Me'avah. But that's not what he's talking about. That's one in billions and billions of people that are able to do that. But Kovesh Yisitzro is possible for everybody. Kovesh Yisitzro means that he simply doesn't follow it. He recognizes it means he's conflicted. He's conflicted. He's in a state of conflict. State of conflict in Yadis is a good state. It means he recognizes he's not going to be in conflict, so what's going to happen is he has to follow his Yetzer. He has to follow his Yetzer. It's an interesting thing. It's a Chazal in the morning. Erevin says, Vayitzer ad Hashem ulekim es Adam. God created man, so it says Shnei Yidin. Two Yids. Oli mi yitzri, oli mi yotzri. That means woe is to me because of my inclinations, and woe is to me from my creator. The word yotzer means creator. So it says vayitzer ad Hashem ulekim es Adam. It means that God created a conflicted creature. Oli mi yitzri, oli mi yotzri. It means he's inherently going to be in conflict, because if he satisfies his instincts, so then he's not in line with his creator. And if he follows his creator, he has the pain of the instincts. So that is Vayitzer Hashem Elokim. So that state, that man has to be a conflicted creature. Only in Yadis, of course, as you know, the highest level is where he emerges from the conflict. That's the highest level. But the state of conflict, he must experience. The highest level is where he's completely removed from it. Even then, I one time mentioned, it doesn't mean that he's totally in a world of bliss at all times. It always can return. It means that on the whole, he's not in conflict. On the whole, he has a very happy and very enjoyable life. he's in a state of he's in a blissful state on the whole, but it doesn't mean that the that it's impossible for it to resurrect itself in certain situations. Even when Moshe Rabbeinu is it. Okay. So anyway, it's like this. Ezel Giva Kovesh is Yitzra. That's a Rashi said. Now, the Pasuk says, Tov Erech Apayim Migiboa. You want Erech, it's also something Rabbeinu explains the answer. It says, Kemo Shekoach HaGuf Hima Alosa V'Chashivaso, Kach Koach HaNashama Hima Alosa. He says, just like the power of the body, the strength of the body is represents its greatness, so too the power of the soul is its respective greatness. So the Gvoras HaGuf Shehi HaKoach Bodom Gam B'Behemohu Kilu Kulam Yesh Koach Lisa Masos U'Mehem Yosra Chavereyem U'Bezel Odiba Ben Zama Kilu Nekras Gevura Ela Mikvoras HaLev Sheyesh Bo Shnei Kochos Lios Gibor B'Mokoma V'Lo Yefache Libo La'Olam. This is like this. V'Gam Koach Krishas HaYetzah V'Hine Chlekes Bein Ha'odam V'Abema. Just a little bit of you. But the problem with the memory is, what does courage have to do with Kovesh is Yisrael? Gibor means he has tremendous strength. He's a courageous person. He's not afraid. He's fearless. So what is the connection? Okay, what is the connection? Gibor ben Mochama ain't a davar gadol kol kach. A person is a gibor in battle. It's not such a great thing. Kemohem b'tor b'nei adam. There are different various people like that. He says, "Ach kvishas hayetzer ha'oyev lo le'ish al ponav la'avido he gevur nis gova v'chazak." What does he mean? Excuse me. It's still two separate things, though. But in other words, there is a connection. I think we one time did mention something along those lines. In other words, why does a person want to be a gibor? Why does a person want to capture a city? Because he assumes that by the conquest, he's going to achieve happiness. So he's trying to change the external reality in order to achieve happiness. So the Chazal say no. On the contrary, the person can only achieve happiness. The real objective is to change the internal reality. Yeah, that's true. There's no question about it. Still, what does that have to do with gevura? What does that have to do with courage? What does that have to do with courage? Yes. It seems to me that gevura is, you know, the Ibn Ezra divides the soul of man into three parts, and he says there's three separate terms. There's nefesh, there's ruach, and there's neshama. Nefesh, he says, refers to the part that has desires, physical desires. Ruach refers to the part, the spirited part of man, refers to his courage. He says the part of man that is a moshel, that is the egoistic part of man, that's the ruach. And the shama refers to the sechel. But it would seem that a gibor, what part of man is does gibor come from? Gibor comes from the from the ruach part. So what does this have to do? Why does a person who controls himself, who doesn't follow his instinctual desires, why is he considered a gibor? I mean, call him a kovesh is Yitzro. Why is he considered a gibor? Gibor would seem to be a person that's in danger. A person that's in danger, in order to be a gibor, you have to overcome your fear of death. That's a difficult thing. It's the instinctual fear of death, the instinct of self-preservation. Let's get back to that one. Let me just take the what Rabbeinu Yonah says. Rabbeinu Yonah is like this. I think what you're saying is true also. Maybe even it goes a little bit deeper into the psychology of the process. But the Rabbeinu Yonah is like this. He says, see, there's one thing he says. Ach krishas hayetzer ho'oyev lo le'ish al ponav la'avido. That is the enemy of man that wants to destroy him. He gvur in his gova v'chazaka. That is a very high high-ranking type of gvura. You see, actually, the idea of courage is something itself which has to be understood, because a person who has courage is usually thought of a person who is fearless. Now, why is a person like that fearless? Usually, it's people who have a certain sense, a very strong sense of invincibility. But that sense of invincibility is not really based on any type of reality. It's just an inner sense. One person is overly frightened, and any little thing, he's always afraid that his life is in danger. Another person is just the opposite. He's brave, nothing's going to happen to me. And most heroes partake of that latter type of feeling. Now, the truth of the matter is that that feeling has no basis in reality and is simply foolish. That's why philosophers said that bravery borders on foolishness. Because in bravery, a person assumes that certain possibilities which reality dictates as being prevalent are non-existent. Based upon what? Based on nothing. He feels that way. A certain feeling of invincibility. You see. So that really we can't define as courage. We really can't define that as courage. Because courage which is based on that feeling of invincibility is just nonsense. It is nonsense. If the person would realize that he's not invincible, he wouldn't have any courage. He realized that the other fellow just felt as a few minutes before just felt just as invincible and he's gone now. So obviously the sense doesn't give us anything, any information on reality, you see. So the only definition that we could use for courage would be basically to have wisdom concerning an area of danger. It means to act wisely and rationally whenever a person is in a state of danger. So wisdom would demand that at a certain time, even though there's a chance that he may lose his life, but under certain circumstances, wisdom would dictate that it's worthwhile for him to make that move. And he has to, according to the way the situation is, the situation demands, it's true, there's a chance that he might lose his life, but the alternative is not a wise one. The alternative of living in his present situation is not wise. So the only real courageous person is an individual who has wisdom and knowledge concerning danger. That's a really courageous person. A person who just feels invincible and goes out in the front lines, and he may be successful, but he's basically a fool. He may be successful, he may be awarded with medals and honor, but he basically is a fool. He wouldn't want to partake of such a mind, such a mentality. But an individual who uses wisdom with regard to danger, that's an individual who is truly courageous. It means that he has to assess, evaluate, and whatever his seichel says is a rational thing to do, that's what he does. That's a courageous person. So he says like this, Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Ach kvisha sayetzer ha'oyev lo le'ish al ponav la'avido hi gevur nizgova v'chazako." This is true gevur. Why? Because what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is that in life, the truth of the matter is that in life there is a real danger. See? A person is constantly in a state of real danger. His soul is constantly in a state of real danger. What is the source of this real danger? The source is the Yetzer. The Yetzer is the source of this real danger. If a person uses wisdom concerning a physical danger, you see, so then he is not really using wisdom concerning his essence. There is such a thing as a physical danger. But the physical part of man is not really his essence. His essence is really the soul. So wisdom concerning danger on a physical level can only be at best wisdom concerning an external part of man's existence. You see. So he's perpetuating his physical, he's doing that which is intelligent insofar as perpetuating his physical existence. But the real life of man takes place on an inner level. That's where the real life of man is. So a person can be physically alive, but if he isn't partaking of his essence, what his essential nature is, which is the enjoyment of Chochmah, if he doesn't partake of that enjoyment, his life is really worthless. He's not living as a human being. That's why it says Ezel Gibo, who is the true courageous man. It means that this is truly a courageous individual because that's the area where wisdom is most demanded concerning the inner self, concerning the soul of man, which is in constant danger, Rabbeinu Yonah says. The real destructive force of man is the destruction of the inner man. That's where his soul resides, and that's where his essence is. If he doesn't protect the inner man, so then he's losing everything. That's why he says over here, this is truly a gibor. The man who is not only using wisdom concerning danger, but he's using wisdom concerning where the danger is, where the real area of danger is. And if he acts wisely in that respect, that is truly the wise person. He is operating, that's the area, that's the arena of the real Gevura. The outside battle is only with regard to the outside man. As you know, the Rambam says that there are different levels of perfection. He says the lowest level of perfection is financial perfection. The next level of perfection is physical perfection. Health, he says. The next level of perfection is psychological perfection. But the highest level of perfection, he says, is perfection of the intellect, of the mind, you see. So what does it mean? It means to say that every level of perfection, what does it mean that these other things are perfection? Why are they perfection? It means they're perfection only insofar as they reach the ultimate essence of man. So financial perfection is considered a perfection insofar as through the finances he's capable of doing that which his essential nature is made to do. But if he doesn't, if it's not headed directly towards that purpose, it's worthless. And the same thing with a person's health. If a person uses his health as a means to achieve chokhmah, then it's an imperfection. Why are they lower? They're lower because each one is more removed from the essential nature. In other words, if a person is lacking in a certain amount, let's say in financial perfection, it is not the same as if he's lacking in a certain amount of chokhmah in terms of his happiness and his well-being. It's an impossibility. Of course, the financial perfection is only an outside means, a far removed means. So it's true, we'll be lacking in a certain degree, but an individual is lacking. One is only as far as the physical man. The other one is as far as his essential nature. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. That was good. Yeah. I would say that all types of courage that the Torah endorses are basically courage as far as the inner man is concerned. In other words, if the Maccabean revolt is a revolt just for nationalism, then it's just another egoistic emotion. Then it's as far as the physical is concerned. But if the revolt is because of the Torah, because the perpetuation of the inner man, and you recognize that this is the proper act to do in terms of his inner soul, that this is the true action course he should take, then it's considered perfection. Then it's considered real Gevura. Then it's considered real Gevura. He said. At any rate, insofar as the members concerned, that's what Rabbeinu Yonah basically saying over here. It could be what you're mentioning. You see, the thing is, like, I would like to get back, though, to another point that we mentioned before. And the point is like this, that insofar, there's something else here, I think. It goes even further. I think Rabbi Rosenthal was mentioning this before, that it is much more difficult to have courage concerning the inner man than courage concerning the outer man, the external physical. I'll tell you why. Because it's like the Ibn Ezra says, that Ruach is the part of man, the reigning part, the part that's the egoistic case, the aggressive part, the part that wants control, the part in man that wants control, the controlling part. That part of man, you see, when he's engaged in battle, so he can make full use of that emotion. He can make full use of that emotion. And that really is a powerful tool for him to be successful, you see. But insofar as the midos of man, the kovesh yitzro, over there it's a different story. Over there, really, he cannot make use of that emotion. Because on the contrary, many times that emotion is the one that really has to be undermined. You see, Godel Tovish Yisitro means that he's able to undermine certain instinctual trends. The instinctual trend might very well stem from that very source itself. So now he doesn't have as an ally anymore the inner emotions. He doesn't have that ally in working on this particular battle. In other words, in functioning in this battle, he doesn't have that as an ally anymore. So he only has courage which stems from Chochmah itself, from his attachment to Chochmah itself. In Kovesh Yitzro, the only medium that he could use, he can't use the medium of the courage itself, the emotion of courage. Because that emotion itself is just another emotion which has to be analyzed in itself. He can't be like the individual who just feels invincible. That's a nonsensical thing. The Kovesh Yitzro is trying to put himself in line with reality. And in putting himself in line with reality, he can't make use of those emotions which are used in an external battle. So therefore, he has very little, you see, he has very little to make use of in this type of a battle. The only thing he can make use of is his knowledge, is his chachmah. You see. The only thing he can make use of is his chachmah. That's from one standpoint. So therefore, it's a far, far more difficult achievement, because the individual who is being courageous is simply making use of certain emotions which are at his disposal. The individual who is being Kovesh is Yitro, who is gaining insight into himself, cannot make use of any of those emotions. On the contrary, all those emotions are now subject to analysis. So there is nothing, he doesn't have any ally in his inherent nature, in his inherent psychological nature. He doesn't have any ally. The only thing he could use is pure chokhmah. That is a different kind of a courage, different type of courage. You see, that's a courage that's based upon one thing. It's a courage that's based upon his attachment to reality. It's a different phenomenon, a different kind of courage. It is not based upon the emotional courage of a conqueror. The emotional courage of a conqueror will never lead him to self-conquest. It will lead him away. And the greatest, the one who's facing a fear, how does he overcome the fear? He overcomes the fear by countering it through another emotion. There's nothing to be afraid of. I'll be all right. He can use a different part of his nature to overcome the fear. In this area, it's an impossibility, because what he's analyzing is the very reason why he feels that the fear is something that he could overcome. He's analyzing those very emotions. In order to be in line with reality, he must analyze every emotion. And analyzing every emotion, he can't possibly be using those emotions which are an ally in another situation. That demands tremendous courage. It's a different brand of courage, a different type of courage. It's a courage that stems from only one thing. His attachment to reality. A different kind of courage.
But in
other words, in not following it, it's true. But in not following it, a person might not be able to remove the emotion. Not following it means that he understands it fully. He has a full understanding of it. There's one more point I think you mentioned before, I didn't get to you. The point is like this. That insofar as a person is dealing with an outward battle, an external battle, there is no danger of loss of the self. The self is complete, and he's simply trying to make sure that the self survives. But the self is not in danger. Whereas in the Kovesh Yitzro, the very self is in danger. See, the Rambam, for instance, says by tshuva, that a person who does tshuva, he says he changes his name. Why does he change his name? Because he says, Eini oso ish. I am not the same person that did this chait. It means to say that he has to face a tremendous fear, which is a fear of the loss of his identity. You see. the fear of the loss of his, that everything that he considers to be him, that he considers to be himself, that he loves and that he values, his personality, his makeup, that which is a part of himself and that which he loves as himself, you see, is in tremendous danger of being lost. Because in being Kovish Yisitro, in understanding the self, he stands the danger of losing a part of himself which he valued and which he considered to be him. You see, that is a far greater danger than facing an external danger. There's a danger of the loss of identity. Loss of identity is a great fear. The person feels that he's not, who am I? Where is the real individual? The real individual usually is simply someone who is made up of various different emotions. But when these emotions are gone, then he's not the same person. Is it? That is tremendous danger. Vigil is something that a person loves the most. A person cannot love anything external as great as the love of himself. And his makeup and his self is basically where his love is attached to. Any danger of that type of a loss is the most fearful thing that a person can face.
But just exposing that emotion,
a person prides himself in his, usually people pride themselves in their choice of different things. I mean, their choice of clothes, their choice, whatever they may like, or they find appealing. So they consider that as part of themselves. This is me. I mean, I dress this way. This is the self. The self, he has a tremendous pride in those emotions which differentiate him from others. Of course, since there's millions of possibilities, so everybody chooses some little thing and finds his identity, you see. But the danger of losing that self by recognition of his likes and his dislikes are simply nonsensical, you see, and that is a different type of a loss.
Yes. What I never promised you, right?
In other words, 3 points. The first point is that insofar as the Gibor is concerned, that this is the true Gibor, because the battlefield is the real one. The battlefield is the one where this is where one exercises the true his true courage, because this is the true battlefield, the inner life. That's number one. Two, the person has to an individual who is brave can cover up his fears, but a person who truly understands himself has to be able to face the source of all his fears. He can't take one part of his nature and cover it up. He has to be able to face the very source. To do that is a tremendous, tremendous gevurah. The nature of the task is very difficult. And three, the danger of the loss is greater, because the loss is the self. That's basically what the individual wants to take revenge properly, waits for the opportune moment, and then he takes revenge. He says, now he says, this is, he calls, that's why it says, the pasuk says, Tov erech apayim migibor. So how do we understand the pasuk? What does that mean? Let's understand plain shot in the pasuk. What does the pasuk mean? What is the meaning of this thing? What is he saying? He says like this. Tov erech apayim migibor. Say ha ma'ar chata. What does one thing have to do with the other and banging on it? He says a person who is mochel mitoch kasos shmenich adol nakom achazman is yosehu mitvus alev min agibar ba mochama shagam b'lo dasi gibar mochama. What's the comparison between the two? Yes?
Yeah, he
says he's better than the gibar. It means like this. What he's saying is, well, he's saying that, you see, in order for a person to take revenge from someone else, to accomplish an act of revenge, so you require a certain amount of force. You require a certain amount of force in order to accomplish it. You see. Now the application of force comes from a certain part of the mind. The application of force towards a certain goal. Okay? Now what he's saying is like this. Tov erech apayim migibor. It means like this. It means that in terms of ratio, no matter how great the gibor is, no matter how great the application of force is, you see, against a certain individual, if it's merely the application of force, you see, it will never come close to an individual who uses his intelligence over the situation. It will never be as good as an individual who uses his intelligence, even though he doesn't have that, that force. In other words, if you weigh the two phenomena, there's the phenomena of the force, tremendous impact that this person wants to accomplish, and then there's the phenomena of intelligence. Now, tov erech apayim migibor. It means a person who is not a gibor doesn't have the ability, doesn't have that force, but is an erech apayim. It means to say that he's wise, he uses chokhmah. He is by far superior than the greatest gibor, no matter how much force he has. If in the application of that force, there's no rationality, it's just an instinctive reaction, you see. So it shows you that that Gvura, the power itself, as great as it could be, as great as it is, is no match for a little bit of reason, you see. Because the power, when it's done without reason, no matter how powerful it is, it simply has to go awry. Whereas a reason plan, even though the individual may not have as much power, but the seichel, the reason, will be far more successful than the greatest gibor. In other words, you could have a match between an individual who has tremendous power at his disposal and is instinctive in nature. He will never be a match for a person who doesn't have such power at his disposal, but who uses his chachma.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Goliath and double. That's right. That's Goliath and double. Very good.
The question here then is...
Yes, Goliath and double. Very good.
Ethical?
It could be... Even though, Yadis, what Yadis does is it doesn't matter. Here it's speaking in terms of the exercising of revenge. But still there's a principle to be derived from it. Now, you're right when you say it was Dovid and Goliath. Because, as a matter of fact, the Pasuk says that when Goliath is a tremendous power, tremendous force, but when David HaMelech approached him, so he said, I'll give your flesh to the Be'emas HaSodah and the Oph HaShemayim. So Chazal say that David HaMelech said, Shelihu, now I have him. Why? He says, because behemoths don't eat flesh. You see? So what did it show? It showed that the man is so angry that this tremendous power, this tremendous force is going to go into motion, but there is, the man has lost his intelligence. He says, when he looks to the master, he says, Shalihu, now he's mine. That was the difference between the Erech HaPayim and the Gibor. So no matter how great the force, you see, it doesn't mean anything. A little bit of intelligence can overcome it. That's the possible. Okay. Now, since we see that this is the case, so we have to attach ourselves to the idea, which in reality is effective. That's the first part of the puzzle. Now, what is the second part of the puzzle? It says, "Et tov erech apayim migibor." But the second part says like this. The second part says, "Umoshe beruchu milochei ir." Okay, what does that mean? Moshe beruchu shehu. Ah, Moshe beruchu shehu yoseh me'erach apayim. This is greater. Why? Ki mitoch ha'kas himochel me'asher yoreh Hashem hu gibor milochei ir. Af al pi sheyeshno shnei dvorim gvuras alei v'chokhma. Kimo she'ne'emar ir giborim olach chokhim v'yored oz mitzchokhim. Yeah, he says it is the pasuk. The Pasuk says the same thing. It says, Ir Giborim, a city of powerful people, Olah Chacham, the wise man went up, the Yoreos Mitzchacham, and he pulled down their strength. Which means, as I mentioned before, like the Dovid and Goliath. He begurus alei v'achachma v'eitzo ha'nachona yilochet ha'yoro. V'alzen yema eitzo gvola mochoma. Moshe b'yucho godo v'chosiv yikol zeh, the Nimsa Kovei Sheshvitzro Mikol Davara. Okay, so what does it mean? How does it mean the Pasuk in light of this? What it means is like this. You see, there are two knowledge plays a role in two ways. In the first way, he's showing you that the benefits of knowledge, that even in the framework of revenge, which is a base instinct, but you see, even in that framework, knowledge is tremendous. So no one can deny the benefit of knowledge. Because knowledge is beneficial, even in this low framework. But he says that Tovich is, Moshe Beruchel means local here, means like this. It means where the person has the ability to change the framework. That is truly good. In other words, where in the first case, what role does Das play in the first case? Das doesn't change the framework. The Das just moves in and works within the framework. But where Das leads a person to an entirely different framework, then certainly he has to be on the greatest level, but then he's completely Das. Then he's completely Das. In other words, in the first situation, when you're talking about Tov Erech HaChaim, you're showing the benefits of Das, and that, like I said before, that the mafia discovered. That Tov Erech HaChaim, that it's better to be there. Rationality works. Rationality works. Organized crime shows that rationality works within the framework of crime. Within the framework of crime. But what Yadda says is, Moshe Beruho, where a person, now you see the value, you see rationality as a value in the practice. But how much greater must it be he who simply follows rationality in his Moshe Beruho, lives in the world of the rational? There, the rational is taken completely out of his framework, and it shows him what the real framework is. So the Seichel is operating not just under the sway of another framework, but the Seichel emerges, so that's essential Seichel. You see the benefit of Seichel even in the distorted framework, but you see the benefit of Seichel. So Seichel per se, where mind itself is telling you, where a person follows mind itself, how much greater in reality, how much closer to reality must an individual be? It has to be that way. Because in the first case, all mind did was limited to a certain framework. And there itself, you see that reality tells him that he's better. Reality substantiates his actions. So reality shows you that mind is better. So how much, if you follow that logic through, you must say that he who follows mind per se, as Moshe Beruho, has to certainly be closer to reality to a far greater degree. You can't measure him immeasurably further and greater degree than the individual who works with rationality within the framework. So what he shows you is that you see from the Erech HaPayim, the person explains in revenge the power of rationality. Because it's a tool of reality. So being in this rationality, tool of reality, that's why it's effective, that's why it's greater than the war. So certainly when this tool itself depicts reality for you and gives you a different picture of reality, the Moshe Beruho, how much in line is such an individual? That's the point. So therefore, the point we're making is that where the mind tells you there's no reason for revenge, then he's really in line with reality. Okay. That's a higher level where the person works within the framework of revenge. So we often mention that the approach of the others, is different than other approaches in so far as it really is a study of reality. Perfectly satisfied the requirements of Yaga by just mere religious commitment. Doesn't suffice. The Yaga is based upon evidence, and therefore Yaga is the new philosophy that emerges in the proper study of reality. This is possible in the field, yet we've demonstrated that to a very great degree. Because we're talking about Tovar HaFayim, therefore, a person who is most Over here, what does one mean? It means all the days of a poor man that has a desire for money, a said, oh, it's like a person who loves money and loves to associate with it. Ah, so lay, a person that has a good heart, that the mayor, the fellow, and the person who loves his family, hold them up for him, always do his good. To me, she also needs to come. Just like a person that's always making a problem. I see you to tell the odds and odds. Therefore, he says, this is a very good news. Why is it a good news? Why is it a good news? The answer is what we said before. The youngest is the study of life. And the study of life demands that a happy life is by far superior to man. A person should always try as much as he can to have a happy life. He doesn't have a life because he's wrong. That's why it's a good leader. A good leader is that anything that leads a person to happiness, true happiness, is good. That is, that has to be defined as the good. And all purpose of our is to teach us what to, how to have to arrive at the true happiness, what it is not to arrive at. So, he said like this. He said, I came here to tell you about my list, and that's the culture. Who want to call us? This person should be the wealthy. I have to have some of nothing more than nothing is kind. The master of the Torah or the mitzvot, and he spent his time learning the Torah and doing the mitzvot. What it does mean is that the first way of use of that, the person who has a good heart, the position is always at a cost. It means that if any state is somehow or other similar to a person's authority, you think that's similarity. What is the similarity? And what is the similarity between the first way and the use of the first way of the cost? Basically, I think what the cost of the same is over. There is such a thing as physical amnesia. So what is amnesia? Amnesia means that a person doesn't have disease. A person that doesn't have disease is a person that is not simply a matter of his relationship. A person doesn't have a basic necessity. Certain things that a person is lacking state. I am making a state of existence. What is that state they see? What kind of a state is it? It means that it can't really exist. It can't really exist from the condition. Of course, you can have things abolished. But there are certain things that bother a person in which it is possible to find himself in possibility of working, but it changes the entire mental state. And that would go such a thing in these different categories, and other things would bother him. And if a lot of things like this, if a person doesn't have his needs, doesn't have his basic necessities, then he's in a totally different state. State of mind is changed. You can't remove yourself from the problem. It's an impossibility. As much as you try, you can't change your state of mind. That's why the Gemara says, Aeneas, my heresy, Ogon, my Daito, my Daphne. The poverty takes a person away from his own mind and away from the mind of God. Which means to say that it will lead you to a state in which you can't think properly, not in terms of his own what is good for himself, in terms of his own interests, his own evaluation, and also it takes him away from living in accordance with the metaphysical requirements. With God, so and we are really is a certain state of mind. What is a state of mind, basically? You see, the state of mind I think can best be described by a psychological attempt, which I think the state that best describes a psychological term, not in time, but the time of mind, but what is one's knowledge. Time is a depletion of ego. A depletion of ego. And a person feels that he doesn't have his necessities. It means that the ego is depleted. It means to say that energy that normally travels towards itself and makes a person feel that he has a living individual, you see? These emotional energies that travel towards itself are impaired. What happens is that people are capable of feeling a sense of normal ego. And the ego is depleted. He's like a dependent. He's like a dependent. Why is that so? Because, you see, a person is basically me. A person is hit hardest when something happens that strikes him at the very basic of existence. And at the basic cost of existence is his necessity. His necessity. If a person does not have a physical necessity, it means all his energies are directed outward towards obtaining something. And he cannot be satisfied with himself as an individual until he obtains something. It's not simply that he wants something. A person can want a lot of things. But there's a difference between a person feeling that he's being a person himself and wants something to add to the self, or where the entire self is lowered and is lacking. And simply his lack expresses itself in terms of a feeling that he is no self. The self is lacking. That is the state of the true state of mind. That's the true state of mind. It's true of any person who feels, for instance, a great dependence on others. A person feels a great dependence on another individual, that imposes that state of life. It means it's an honor. It means it's dependent on somebody else who is very useful. Whereas an entire ego has to be completely dependent. But it can't possibly happen in the sense of value. Chavra is more. Personality is less. And Osher, on the other hand, represents the devil. It's nothing you need, but you have. And you've made the future of you there. That's what I see it as. And it's true. It is definitely true. Of course, that's why we get all that way you see. But I'm not sure if it's just the same work. But an uneven itself, I mean, he's completely out of character. That's intolerable. So Aeneas and Aeschylus really represent two different states. So Aeneas represents the defeated ego, and Aeschylus represents the defeated ego. That's why in the power of the place, I'm not even in the country. Thank you. something other than it really is. So it seems to me this statement is something that we're showing you to be, meaning that the role of medical discipline is not a certain use of a mental substance, and you can see the kind of device. But what happens is like this. The analogy we go is the truth, but it's because of a psychological phenomenon. What happens is that the depression of the ego and the consequence of something which is a basis in reality, which is a person in a normal state of being poor, is going to remain and satisfy with the poor ego. So now what happens is even though he actually in reality is trying to get at that problem, but nevertheless, the depleted ego will attach itself to that idea. So he will think that the reason why his ego is depleted is because he doesn't have enough money. You say, why? Because money in a certain framework does actually reason cognitively related with the depleted ego. But now, there's no reason for him to have a depleted ego anymore because he has enough money. But he does see, because the